Welcome to the VoxGig Developer Relations Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Roger. I speak to people in the software development community about developer relations, public speaking, and community events. I'm the CEO of VoxGig, a software consultancy that builds DevRel tools. Because we believe in the power of community, we host a monthly virtual online meetup for everyone in developer relations. Check out devrelmeetup.com. And visit voxgig.com to view our work, use our tools, and sign up for our newsletter. Okay. Please sit back and enjoy my fireside chat with today's guest. Today, I'm talking to Francisco Piccolini about his community management work in OpenNebula and before that, Mozilla. We talk about the surprising dangers of ambassadors and why they may not be as beneficial as you think. And we talk about the responsibility that government has to open source. Serious topics for a serious discussion. Francisco, welcome to the Fireside with VoxGig podcast, talking about developer relations and community. How are you today?
Thanks, Richard. I'm pretty fine. I'm a little bit busy with some of the stuff that we are doing these days in OpenNebula, but I'm pretty fine.
Awesome. Thanks. It's good to be busy, right? That is the life of the community and event manager. Continuously busy.
If you're not busy, it's something happens.
Exactly. Then you should be worried. Okay, let's start with what you're doing right now. OpenNebula. What do you guys?
Okay, I'm the official title. It's open source community manager. I'm basically running the community for OpenNebula. OpenNebula is a virtualization cloud platform or cloud virtualization platform, whatever you want to call it. It's very similar to OpenStack or VMware for those who doesn't know what it's OpenNebula, which is okay. My job is to spread the word about the platform, to spread the word about the open source and all the advantage that it came with using open source for managing your cloud environment or your cloud infrastructure. We are focused on enterprise clients for saying away, but we are open to a lot of contributions from everyone. Not need to be an enterprise to use OpenNebula. Actually, at some point, it's if you use VirtualBox, you can start running your own instance. So it's pretty simple. Awesome. Basically, I'm doing a lot of content, a lot of awareness, coordinating presence of the company in events. So yeah, that's basically my day to day.
So okay, let's talk about the OpenNebula community, right? What does that mean? Does that mean a series of in person events? Does it mean webinars? Do you have a forum? Do you have to moderate the forum? Do you have Discords? Like, there's so many different options. People say, let's do community, right? The CEO says, I want community.
But what do you... community. I want
there's
a community.
Like, there's 50 things you can do.
Yeah.
Exactly. So what do you guys do? I mean, let's describe the elements of OpenNebula's community and maybe what's missing and what you need to do, what's worked and what hasn't.
Okay. Basically, the OpenNebula community, it's like I say, it's a company's, it's basically a company, a brand community for saying away, because our main clients are companies that need to deal with an infrastructure in the cloud. So there are not, let's say, final users or volunteers or people that are jumping around and try and test something like, I don't know, PHP or Kubernetes or stuff like that. This is a little bit more bigger in one way than that. So basically what we have, it's we have a community forum to evacuate all the questions and giving support to the people that are using the community edition. Right now we have two versions of the platform. One, it's the enterprise edition, which is the one that gives support to the clients, and that's where we get money from there.
You gotta eat.
Yeah. Sometimes people are kind of freaking out. You're an open source. You shouldn't have to charge for your services. Yes, tell that to Red Hat and a lot of people. But yeah, that's the way it is. And usually, open source business works in this way. You give a support channel or a service channel for these people, and your license allows you to use it in a certain way. We have an Apache 2 license, so that's why we can do it in this way. And basically, the community. Looks like people that are helping us on spreading the word about OpenNebula, talks up in events about OpenNebula, how they use it. They help us with their integrations. We have a company that does a backup integration for the platform. So basically, we do a lot of things with them. There are other people's, like there are other companies that does other type of integrations, and basically that's the type of community. It's basically a B2B community, which is a little bit more complicated to handle because there are some sensitivities and some stuff that you need to be aware that, okay, this is a different level of people volunteering for your community or for your company or project. This is a type of community that are going to be busy. They are not going to be willing to participate super actively or super in a proactive way. So you need to be kind of being more transparent at some point than in a volunteer community, at least from my experience.
What does that mean practically? Like, do you guys run a shared Slack channel? Do you run private webinars? Or do you do internal conferences at companies?
Basically, what we do is trying to do joint events, which is Tech Days, kind of a meetup of 4 hours where we show how Open Nebula works. And basically, in conjunction with these companies, we show also what the company is doing with Open Nebula and the project behind. For example, we will have in March, we will have a Tech Day here in Madrid about public sector and cloud sovereignty, which is something that we are very involved. And we are doing this with another company that it's working with us. It's doing some stuff with us. Then we will probably do another one in Rotterdam, no, Rotterdam, no, but in Netherlands. I don't remember exactly the, will say it probably wrong, the name, so apologies for my Dutch. Utrecht, which is close to Amsterdam, but very close, some close to Amsterdam, where we will talk about high availability storage. So that type of things we are doing with these clients, companies, community.
And on the, I suppose on the developer contribution side of things, do you guys have like a GitHub account, or how do you manage the open source side?
We have a repo. Actually, we are developing two projects which are super interesting. One is Ansible Playbooks, which is very popular because Ansible, Terraform, people are kind of super excited about it. So we are developing that project. It's on GitHub. We have the repo on GitHub, which is github.com/one, and then you can find everything. Or no, open/nebula, sorry. And then we have another one that it's going to, it's super new, which is OneApps. Which is another type of doing integrations or appliances for the marketplace, basically to use the platform and do some integrations with your application that you will develop. So basically, it's that the core of the platform doesn't need too much attention because it's very mature and doesn't need to do a lot of things.
And is the community edition on GitHub? Is that open source in that way?
It's open source. The community, both are open source, the enterprise and the community. The only difference is that you have to buy a license to be enterprise and get not a better support, but a 24/7 support. If you don't use the enterprise, you have the community and the community forum. And the community forum, it's kind of, I post a question on Discord, which is the service, the tool that we use. And then sometimes it's 1 hour, sometimes it's 1 day, sometimes it's 2 days. You know, it's a little bit more flexible.
Well, that's normal. That's the one.
Which
that is
normal.
That is the way it works.
At least I can promise that you will have a reply because I'm the moderator of the forum, and I'm usually try to finish the month without topics that are not responded yet or without response. Yeah. Because that's a bad image for the forums.
Absolutely. So, do you have like an ambassador program? Do you work with independent freelancers, consultants, who have some sort of formal relationship with Open Nebula?
Yeah,
some people do this, right?
Yeah, to be honest, Richard, I hate the champions and the ambassador program.
Okay,
for me,
tell
it's
me more.
A kind
tell
of
me more.
Yeah, okay. Because it's I mean, I hate in the good way, not in the bad way of I'm angry, I don't like it. I don't like to have different tiers of volunteers or contributors in a community. You are putting a difference between the people that are more able to collaborate and the people that are willing to collaborate, but they don't have the same amount of time than the
gotcha.
Others.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the piece that I'm saying. I don't like this type of distinctions. But you have to deal with that. You have to have it. Back in my previous companies, when I work in another company, we wanted to start an ambassador program. I was opposed to that because I say the same thing that I say to you now. We ended
it's not
up
democratic,
it.
Right? It's not.
No, it's not a kind of, yeah. Okay. Most of the open source community are a lot of meritocracy. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. I understand. I've been involved in open source community since the beginning of 2000, and I know how it works. But for me, if I'm running a community, I prefer to keep the same people with the same opportunities and give them the sensation that they are all the same and are collaborating all together. Having this distinction for me, it's a little bit complicated to manage because at some point you are telling these people that are not worth to participate or to be part of the community.
Yeah, right? So it's kind of a hidden, there's a hidden danger to ambassador programs.
Yep.
Then.
Yep. Yeah. So that's why you need to work almost the double to be sure that the people that are not in the ambassador program feel part of the community as well and participate and collaborate and contribute in the way that they can.
I think this is a good example of a mistake I see some companies make where they go to Wikipedia or somewhere and they see a big long list of developer relations activities, right? Meetups, webinars, Slack channel, ambassadors, the repo, forum, right? And they just go, okay, just tick everything. And now we have a community.
Exactly. But that's a big danger because at some point in some communities, it starts a competition and not a good one.
Yeah.
I've been there. I've been not part, but I witnessed those type of things. And it's counter-effective in the end. However, if you communicate it and you've been transparent and you communicate in a way that you explain the reasons and what are the rules and, you know, the limits, the boundaries and all that, you can manage to have an ambassador program.
And
but
you commit
again,
to the work to keep
exactly.
things healthy, right?
That's, exactly.
Yeah, I think this is a really important point, right? That you don't, developer relations is not, it's not easy, right? This is why...
Yep.
This is why we have this specialist field. Understanding these insights around community is so critical to making it work. I want to ask you a more personal question, Francisco, right? So
okay.
you've worked at some really interesting places, right? Like Mozilla and CodeMotion and all that sort of stuff. How did you get into tech community management? How did that happen?
Okay, I'm gonna try to be brief. I've started to in the late 90s. Well, basically, in I'm a 80s kid, so you know, Amiga, Commodore, and all that stuff.
Oh yeah, snap.
Start doing
right.
basic stuff. You know, COBOL and all that languages that are easy, and you have to do a hangman. Easy. Wow, it's super magic. Then running video games and all that. It's super nice and so analogic that you have to wait like 5 minutes to actually play a game.
Yeah.
Not like today that you turn off the PlayStation and it's like a couple of, in some cases, couple of seconds.
Yeah.
Anyways, I've been on that field for I'm been interested on that field. I'm from Argentina and I moved to Spain. But before moving to Spain, I've been collaborating a little bit with the Mozilla community. There was a forum in Spain in Spanish, run by a French guy. That's a long story. I'm not gonna get into.
But sounds interesting.
A French guy that speaks Spanish, and he created this community forum.
Awesome.
We started to meet there. We created we started to run a website, and basically when I moved to Spain, I lost a little bit of the contact, but then I got the contact with the people from Madrid. And in 2007, we created a community portal, a community site, which was Mozilla Hispano. And I was a little bit more into marketing and translation back in that moment. But there were a lack of people trying to run events. We have a couple of launch parties back in the days when the community does these type of things. Every new release comes with a launch party, and
Yay.
Everyone was basically that was the fun. So I started to coordinate those type of things. We were invited to other conferences, events, and all that. So I've been doing a little bit more of events rather than community itself. I fast forward, I joined the company in the Mozilla Company Corporation in 2014, mainly because there's this guy in Europe that knows how to run events and how to run community events. So I've been invited to run an event in Tunisia. That event in Tunisia never happened, but I was involved in events more and more. And then from the events team, I moved to the community team because I was super involved with the Mozilla program back in the days, which was Mozilla Reps. So I moved to the community team also to help and documenting a lot of events. Basically how to run an event, how to run a meetup, how to run this, how to run that. So a lot of wiki and markdown back there. Then I moved to a more community management role, not so much because I still was in the coordination of bringing volunteers to the all hands, helping volunteers to run events in their local places, sponsoring some stuff from the community. So I've been involved in some stuff of that. And then I've been doing a little bit of project management for a couple of projects that we have back in those days because no one had the time. I had the time.
Yeah.
Fran, can you help us? Yes.
This is such a typical developer relations story,
yeah,
right?
Where yeah,
you have
yeah,
to do
yeah,
everything.
Yeah. Yeah, but I learned a lot about community building, a lot of conflict resolution. I've been involved in a couple of conflict resolution situations that I've been involved. I helped to develop a part of the community guidelines that Emma Irwin, now in GitHub, developed in 2014, 2015, around those dates. So I've been involved on those type of things, on those type of conflict resolutions.
Is this community members who upset each other and
exactly,
or become
yeah.
abusive? Or, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Don't go into specifics, but, you know, let's say I'm running a relatively large community and that type of thing happens, right?
Happens.
So how do you manage it? What's the
basic
principles of...
Yeah, basic principles. You have to have a kind of a code of conduct for the community. That's why the community participation guidelines, which was inspired in another participation guidelines and mainly with LGBT communities and all that, which was the work that Emma did back then was super, super nice and super complete. So you have to have the limits and kind of these are the rules to behave well in the community, which is sometimes, and it happens to me that I have to explain this in a forum. Sometimes it looks like it tells you how to dress, but it's not. Okay,
yeah.
It's like, okay, you have to wear something. It's not like I'm going to tell you which color you have to use, but at least wear pants, at least, you know, clean yourself, go and have a shower, because, you know, those type of things that it's kind of a basic principles and common sense.
Yeah.
But in some of the cases, these community members are the people that are, they have egos, apologies for my pronunciation. They have egos, they have conflict that came from before joining the community because there are people, they have relations.
People are people.
They have, people are people, and sometimes one is envy of the other, or because they got a promotion or they got a trip to some place paid by Mozilla. So it's a little bit, you know, tricky. So basically what you try is to listen to both sides and try to find a common place and say, okay, or girl or pal, to be a little bit more inclusive. These are the things. And you try to collect all the information, like if you're a detective, and try to find a midterm where both can still be part of the community. And if not, you have to decide which one should step off.
It's very tricky.
It's delicate.
In conferences that I've been involved in, I mean, we've had challenges around... some of the attendees bringing psychedelic drugs.
Ah,
and,
okay.
And distributing
that's even...
distributing them for free as fun.
Yeah, that's not fun. That's not, at least for a conference. I mean, for a party, could it be? But if you want to attend a conference, I don't know.
But, you know, and then you have to sit down with that member of the community and say, you know, we're not judging you, you know, that's your thing, but maybe this is not appropriate.
This is a little bit illegal.
And there's also that, right? So,
actually in Saudi, in most of the countries of Saudi Asia, it can bring
super bad,
super bad. Like, actually, we run an event in Singapore, in Mozilla, and I have to say this to some people, because I don't know what are your backgrounds, if you smoke, if you do drugs, I don't care, to be honest. But
Singapore,
be aware of this. This is this is the rules that this country has.
But you're right. The challenge is sometimes, especially with open source communities, some people are really passionate about open source. Yep. And it comes from a passion for freedom and self-expression. Yep. And a little bit of not taking rules seriously.
And a lack of social abilities.
Yes, and that as well, because they're very technical, right?
Yeah,
So, part of our role is guidance, I guess, keeping people safe.
It's more like keeping people safe and between each other, treat them well, because other type of things is that you have a lot of people with a lot of I don't want to say syndromes or kind of specific things like Asperger or stuff like that, but there are some people that has real issues to communicate with other people,
yes,
or to explain and communicate. So we usually try to explain how to share feedback, how to deliver feedback in a constructive way, because it sometimes can be harsh.
I've seen other challenges. This didn't happen to me personally, but I was at a conference, let's say in the last 3 years, where a speaker was insensitive to a particular subgroup. Now, not a subgroup in terms of ethnicity or anything like that, or any of the common ones. Actually, a subgroup in terms of their technical focus.
Yeah.
And but was on stage, and I could see the poor conference organizer just putting his head. He was nearly crying.
Yeah.
He said, I have a speaker who's insulting my attendees.
I have some stories about that, and it's sad, because in some of the cases it's not like the speaker thinks that it's a funny thing to, or a joke that he's doing or she's doing it, basically, or usually it's he, she, female are a little bit more aware of these type of situations and doesn't go into these type of things. But when the speaker does that, usually you don't want to go over and review the slides or check what they are doing. But in some of the cases, if you know that it's a conflictive speaker, you know it in advance. If you're a conference organizer, I was a conference organizer also as well. But if you know, and if you investigate a little bit about the speaker, you know these type of things, and it could happen. So you try to avoid them. And if it happens, you have to go and say, apologize. I'm going to be in a shitstorm of PR right now, but I will be trying to apologize as much as I can. Try to say, okay, this is not the way that the conference thinks or behaves or whatever, and try to solve the issue as fast as possible, because if not, it's against the brand image of the conference.
Learning how to deal with this stuff is not something you can learn in a book, is it? You kind of have to do it, right?
Yeah, but to be honest with you, I'm having a proposal of attack in a talk in my backlog about how to do community and why the theory doesn't work, why you don't have to follow the book, because there are a lot of books about communities. There are a lot, some are good books about communities. I can suggest and recommend a couple of them. Others are not so good and goes into the common sense, the topics and the cliches. But in the end, if you're not comfortable dealing with other people, if you're not comfortable trying to be empathetic, if you're not listening to the others, you're not doing community, you're running kind of a club.
It's just marketing, broadcast marketing.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, because we have a few minutes left, a little bit about politics. Well, politics. I suppose maybe that's too strong a word. Open source and government, yep. Right? And support for open source. One thing that's good is we see a lot of awareness that open source is important. We see certain governments deciding to deliberately choose open source solutions. Yep. But what do you think on a policy level? Wow, I mean, this is so wonky and nerdy, right? But on a policy level, at a practical level, we're in Europe, so I guess this is
We're in Europe, if people from other places listen,
they would say, from your perspective, you know, being in an open source company and sharing those values, what should governments be doing, right, on a practical level? Okay. Sorry, I'm asking you to design an entire open source policy.
We should talk about, to be honest, Richard, the situation right now, at least in the European level, I don't know in other parts of the world, I'm pretty sure that in the US it's completely different about government involved in sponsoring or supporting certain things. In the European Union, they are actively trying to promote the use of open source, which is something that I've been discussing since the beginning of 2000. So it's fun to see some politics and some administrators and people from the commission telling that, oh, we need to invest in open source. And it's kind of like, yes, you should invest in open source, but 20 years ago. That's the issue right now, that I'm assisting and attending a lot of conversations where there are a lot of good goodwill, good initiatives, and trying to, you know, efforts from the governments from the governments to do stuff for promoting and supporting and advocating for open source, that it should happen 20 years ago. And that's the fun part and the ironic the irony of all this. I think that since there are some protections about internal commerce, like agriculture and all that, I think that the open source should receive some of the same or something similar, or a way that the open source is a little bit more protected than other technologies, mainly because the effort and the philosophy behind will lead you to do good things. It's for the benefit of all. It's not like it's going to be beneficial for one country or one company. It's beneficial for the whole ecosystem. It's like now with the race of the AI and all that, European Union is saying that, AI should be regulated. Okay, yes, should be regulated. But on the other hand, you should promote and sponsor stuff that says, the AI should be following standards, following open standards, following the principles of open source, about transparency, about a lot of things that at this point, since it's running too fast, all the development, there are a lot of companies and startups that jump in and say, no, we are going to develop this solution. It's like the company saying that we are going to develop our platform for developers. Good. But there are a lot of other platforms, and there are platforms that are open source that can be also useful for your case. You can adapt it. Yeah. And that's the ignorance around the open source. You don't need to use it and exactly as it is. You can fork it. You can adapt it to your needs. The problem is that it requires a lot of effort, a lot of people, a lot of resources, a lot of money and all that. Okay. But you have the base. You don't need to start from scratch all over and all over again. Here's the same with the European Union. The European Union should be aware that this is not like the miracle that will save European Union and bring European Union to the innovation field and compete with US and compete with China. This is something that needs to be nurtured in a long term. Okay, so that's the piece that I'm, in one side I'm happy, on the other side I'm angry because it should happen a long time ago, but I'm glad that it's happened
at least it's happening now.
At least it's happening. Yeah. The problem is that European Union is a little bit more bureaucratic than many of the open source projects that are around. Yeah. So it's going to be fun to see how they deal between each other and how to evolve. But yeah, we need the European Union helping us.
It's it's hard to think about how the structures should work, right? So if you think about government support for arts, music, literature, this type of thing, you know, you are a playwright, you can get a grant to write your play and do a production, right? And there's you know, there's other arts councils or whatever that will evaluate your play and then decide who gets the grant. Maybe it's fair, maybe it's not, but there's kind of a system.
Yes, there is a system.
And but we have nothing like that for open source. There's nothing.
You're talking about concrete things. Yeah. The open source and the technologies, languages, and all that are abstract in the end.
That's the problem.
Touch.
Right. Yeah. You cannot touch. That's the problem. It's a problem I always have with my family. You know, what do you do for a living? I build websites. I fix printers.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why I'm also jealous of artists, right? You sing a song, you go up on stage and you sing the song and it's done.
And it's done. Yeah, exactly.
And you don't have to debug it and release a new version, and you know. And people can feel it emotionally, right?
But it's culture. This is also culture. The technology is culture. The internet is something cultural because it changed a lot of paradigms. It changed a lot of, a lot of ways of interact between each other. I think that internet, I always like to say that I can say to my child that I work back in the days in Mozilla where it was something that care about the web. Nowadays, I'm working for a company that cares about how to deal with your data, your cloud in Europe, you don't need to use Chinese stuff, American stuff to deal with the cloud. And that's something that, even though that it's the cloud, it's a little bit kind of a magic word, and it's kind of a the cloud is everything. Right. No, the cloud doesn't need to be everything, but in the end and eventually, as far as we evolve and develop better technology, we will need more of the cloud. And I would like to have a little bit of control of what I'm doing, how I'm using it, where I'm using it, and a lot of things that nowadays I don't have an idea of what's going behind.
Exactly. Francisco, we have come to the end. We could talk about the politics stuff for a lot more.
Yeah, but we didn't cover a lot of things.
Thank you so much. I think for me, the biggest thing is just a little bit of insight into how hard it is to keep a community healthy. It's just so much work, emotional work.
Every community is different. Every community needs to be dealt in a different way. I can tell you that it's not the same community in Mozilla, which is worldwide, than in CodeMotion, which was a little bit more specific about the technologies in general. And it's not the same community that I have now in Open Nebula. Every community needs to be dealt and handled and managed in a different way. And that's not simple, and that's the experience. I could write a book, but the book will be useful for the Mozilla, for Open Nebula, and for CodeMotion, not for everyone. So I would like to say that we are unique. I think that we are unique. But on the other hand, I'm not the only person that has this profile, this background, and all that. I'm Francisco, who has an experience in communities, in Mozilla, in CodeMotion, and Open Nebula, but that doesn't mean that I can run any type of community.
Yeah.
Could be, but yeah. I don't know. I would like to be a little bit more humble.
No, it's humble. Humble is the right way to approach communities, for sure. Francisco, thank you so much. Take care. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Richard. Bye-bye.
You can find the transcript of this podcast and any links mentioned on the podcast section of our website, voxgig.com/podcast. Subscribe to the VoxGig Developer Relations Podcast on Apple, Spotify, or any podcasting platform. We publish each Tuesday and Thursday. You can also access the archive of our meetup talks on the VoxGig YouTube channel or the VoxGig website. Thanks for listening. Catch you next time.